searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
I think our nation was turned on its head for 3 years based on a completely bogus narrative that was largely hyped by an irresponsible press.
Attorney General William Barr speaking truth. Welcome into this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host here, driving the big bus through crazy town, hoping you're having a great Friday and looking forward to a great weekend with plans to unplug, disconnect, air your head out, and remember what life is really all about. It is Friday, January 7th, 2020. And I don't know about you, but I'm so sick of impeachment. I'm so tired of the politics, all of this stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about that today, but there's other stuff to talk about. And so we're going to veer off the tracks and talk about things besides impeachment today. Among those things, why Chuck Todd's feelings are hurt over at MSNBC. Luke Skywalker, I hope I have time to get to Mark Hamill's story. I really hope I do. We'll try. We'll try to get there. The Trump administration has made a move about prayer in schools. We'll take a look at that in a little bit. And, of course, there's impeachment junk and some senators who should probably recuse themselves. But first, before we do any of that, how about this? Let's celebrate a birthday, shall we? Why not? It's Friday. Come on now. You know the song? Oh, it's a while before they sing anyway. It's somebody's birthday today. And it's a birthday worth celebrating, you know? Because she's 98. Yep. Happy birthday to Betty White. Betty White is celebrating her 98th birthday today. The woman is still gainfully employed. She's still working. She's going to outlive all of us, I think. You know, there are members of the Rolling Stones thinking, what's she taking? Yeah, Betty White is 98 today. Congratulations to Betty White. Is she the only golden girl left? I think she is, isn't she? I'll have to look that up. But congratulations to Betty White. That's funny. She is 98 years old today. And it reminded me this morning when I saw the news, I thought, wow, good for her. She's still up there. She's still busy. She's still funny. She's sharp as a razor. 98 years old. And it made me think, my wife's grandmother lived to be 104. Betty's got 6 years to go. But to beat that, but oh my, that's quite up there, you know, a lot of life experience, a lot of history. She's seen a lot of stuff happening. 98 years old. Wow. Can you imagine being 98? I got parts of me that feel like they're 98 right now. Oh, but happy birthday to Betty White. Good for you, hon. Glad to see you hit the big 9-8. Oh, man. It's good to start a Friday celebrating a birthday. That's good stuff. So I hope that if you're celebrating, you'll let me know. You can always email me. You can send your notes to Mark at dailyperspectivepodcast.com. You can find me on Facebook. I do have a page. Just look for Mark Congleton, Congleton. That's the last name. Yeah, it's a weird name. There's a town in England called Congleton, and there are more Congletons in the United States than there are in England. I just know this because it's my name. And you can reach me that way. You can reach me, let's see, there's the website, there's Facebook, I'm on Twitter. The show is on Twitter and Facebook. Just reach out, let me know if it's your birthday or if you got one coming up pretty soon. Let me know, okay? It is a... I hope we have another nice day. I thought we were going to have nasty weather in our neighborhood yesterday, and it turned out sunny. It was a gorgeous day. I got out for a little while. There's this barbecue joint, and I say joint. It's not like you would think of some barbecue joints where you really don't want to look at the health rating behind the counter. This is a barbecue place that I've come to love that's not too far from the studio. And from time to time, my wife go there. We haven't had anything, I mean anything, from this place that we've said, I won't do that again, because it's all just fantastic. Well, they posted an ad on Facebook the other day. The name of the place, it's called Barbecue Stop. BBQ and the word stop. And this is not a paid advertisement. I'm just raving over this place. And they have won awards. They have these huge trophies in their front window because they actually do. They're competing barbecue cookers. They go to barbecue competitions all over the place, and they have won awards for their sauces. I mean, when you get down to it, barbecue is not rocket science, okay? It's meat and it's heat. The seasonings and the sauces are what makes the difference. And these guys have won huge awards for their barbecue sauces. They have one that has peach. It's a peach barbecue sauce. Oh my goodness, it's good. And their Carolina sauce is great. Anyway, so they posted an ad to Facebook on Wednesday, saying that their lunch special for Thursday would be chili dogs. And I thought, oh, $5.99, two chili dogs, French fries, slaw, and then you add a drink, and it comes in around $10 by the time you get through taxes and everything. But I just thought, wow, I want their take on the chili dog. They didn't disappoint. It was pretty good. I, in all honesty, it wasn't the best I've ever had, but it was pretty doggone good. And as lunches go, not too expensive, not too at all, really. So I had a good time. And then they posted today their lunch special. I got to dig it up. I don't remember what it was. I just remember I went, ooh, oh my. Oh, it was a jerk chicken sandwich. And I'm thinking, now I got to go try their take on jerk chicken. Does my life revolve around food? I'd rather not say. Okay. But what else was there? There was something else I wanted to tell you about. There was the lunch at Barbecue Stop. And then, oh, yeah. I stumbled across this product the other day. I say the other day. It was last week. And maybe like you see these things pop up on your social media. Facebook is sold. It's sold. It's on Facebook and Twitter, but there's advertising just almost constantly. And it doesn't matter what you do. You can tell them, I don't want to see this ad anymore. You still see, they find some other ad from some other company advertising almost exactly the same thing. And you see that. But one of the things I see from time to time is a post about the, it's like the top 20 things I've bought from Amazon that I would buy again. And that's the gist of it. Sometimes it's the top 30 things on Amazon I really want, that kind of a thing. And one of the things, I tend to always stop on that and scroll through them to see what they're talking about. Because sometimes, most of the time, it's just, oh, please. But every now and then, there's something like, huh, well, that's an interesting idea. And so I stopped on one of those and ordered it. It's a product called Bottle Bright. Have you heard of this stuff? Now, if you use stainless steel bottles for water, if you use, like, okay, I have this here. This is what I carry. It's my little stainless steel, super duper insulated coffee mug. It holds a couple of cups of coffee, and I use it every morning when I'm doing the podcast. And it's from Arctic, RTC. They do... they do kind of, they're not Yeti knockoffs, but it's a Yeti type product. Okay. They have tumblers, they have coffee cups, they have all kinds of things. Arctic is the name of the company. And I got a couple of these, for my wife and myself for Christmas last year, because she commutes into work. I commute by foot into the studio, and we both drink a lot of coffee in the mornings. And This little thing will keep my coffee warm well into the morning. Let me just say that by the time I get through in the studio doing just editing work and the like, not only for the podcast, but for other things, by the time I get through in the studio, late in the morning, nearly lunchtime, if there's coffee still in this thing, it's still warm enough to drink. And I gave one to my pal Mike, Mike Eccles, for Christmas this year. I gave him and his sweet wife, Rita, a pair of these things this year. And he has already, a couple of times, sent me notes saying, I put this in my car at 4 o'clock this morning. It's 10:30 now. My coffee is still hot. I'm on the golf course. This kind of thing. I'm on the golf course. It's been a couple of hours since I put coffee in this thing. It's still hot. Well, I love the thing, right? I use it every single day. Well, the thing is that after a while, it doesn't matter how much you scrub or what you do, it starts turning this odd color. It starts turning the color of coffee. There's something about the coffee sticking to to this stuff. And the only way I've found to remedy that problem before this was to use like those tablets that you put in the dishwasher. One of those things for an entire load of dishes. You can do that with glass coffee carafes and the like too. Just drop one in there and fill it with hot water and let it sit until it finishes bubbling and all that stuff and rinse it out and it's clean. That's how I found out to do it. But this Bottle Bright stuff, little tiny tablets, little tiny. I'd say it's about the end of your finger, you know, from your last finger joint down to the tip of your finger. It's a little plug that just goes in and it fizzes and you let it go. You just let it go until it finishes fizzing and you rinse it out. It's sparkly clean again. I used it on, we have a big Zojirushi, and honestly, I'm not name dropping. It's just the name brand. It's a coffee pumper, like an institutional pumper. It's all stainless steel, no glass liner. I've broken so many of those. And trust me, you haven't lived until your coffee pump is turned over in the car on your way to do a morning show at 4 a.m. and you've got coffee everywhere, because all they have to do is tip over. They just, and they break. That's all there is to it. That's the glass lined ones. So I stopped buying those. I found the Zojirushi at a thrift store for, God, I want to say it was, what was it? I think I might have paid $15. No, it was like $7 I paid for it. Looked it up. It's an $80 thing. Anyway, I found three of them. I have one that's on the kitchen counter all the time, and I use it, and I had the same problem with it. And I used three of these little tablets, filled the whole thing up with hot water, let it sit overnight, sparkly clean. It's called Bottle Bright. Just, I'm sorry if I've bored you away, but if you're looking for a great way to keep your stainless steel hydration bottles and things like that clean, Bottle Bright's the way to go. I wish I was getting paid for it, but I'm not. Just letting you know. But that's it. Okay. Now, here's something I want to think about. I think you should think about today. Here we are facing impeachment in the Senate. The senators are there. Chuck Schumer is making demands. He's demanding more witnesses. But he only wants the witnesses that the Democrats will benefit from. And this is all because the entire impeachment process is about damaging Donald Trump as much as possible. Donald Trump is making America happy. The Democrats are out of sync with the population of the country. The most of them. Well, there are some of these candidates, as you well know, who would like to be the next president. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Cory Booker, Gillibrand, Harris. Six of them, six senators, actively running, trying to be the Democrat nominee for president for 2020. Six of them. They're either running or they have been running. They're running to take Donald Trump's job. And now they're trying to force him out. Something to think about today. Do you think these senators should recuse themselves from this impeachment process? After all, it's obvious what they think. It's obvious what their opinion is. It's obvious what their position is on the entire thing. They're so invested in removing this president that they have taken on the task of running for office to replace him. Isn't it obvious that these people have a vested interest in removing Donald Trump or damaging him as much as possible? Isn't it obvious that these six senators, specifically these six, the rest of the Democrat Party, the rest of the Democrat senators are feeling the same way. But these have taken it well beyond to the fact that they've dedicated a great deal of time and sought a great deal of money to help them campaign to take the president out. Don't you think it's a conflict of interest? Since the Senate serves as the jury pool, the jury in this trial, don't you think these six senators should be disallowed from being on the jury because they have made it abundantly clear where they stand, and it is obvious that they are not impartial? Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. It occurred to me during the break, I talked about these things, that, like the barbecue place and the product. It made me wonder how many people are hitting keyboards. Let me look that up. I hope you do. I really hope you do. It is the Friday edition of the podcast. We're diving headlong into the weekend at the end of the workday today, and hopefully you got a great one planned. Good things for you. And that you will take some time to live in the quiet, whether that's a drive in the countryside, whether that's whatever. Just turning off the radio, turning off the noise, turning off the music, turning off everything, and spend some time in the quiet. Also, spend some time with your family, your friends, your loved ones, and really connect with life, because that's what life is all about. It's certainly not about the silliness that's going on in Washington, D.C., because, oh, my Lord, what we have going on in Washington, D.C., really, really, as I said the other day, it proves that it is a hive of scum and villainy. It's just bad. It's a bad, 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 bad thing that we have going on in D.C.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Oh, well, excuse me. It's a nasty place, and there are nasty things going on there, and there have been for quite some time. And I admire those who want to go and correct the problem, but then there are those who are there to profit. A lot of them. And that's one of the biggest things that's wrong with our country, is they're mainly concerned with building a fortune, not rebuilding the legacy of a nation. Matt Margolis over at PJ Media has an article today, or actually came out yesterday, about one of the aspects of the impeachment. And that aspect is Supreme Court justice nominations. And he says, with a Republican majority in the U.S. Senate, Donald Trump has been remaking the judiciary with record speed. Approximately 25, well, it's not just the Supreme Court, it's approximately 25% of circuit court judges are Trump appointees. 25%. And Democrats just can't stand that. It seems that throughout Trump's presidency, they've come up with various unconstitutional schemes to thwart Trump's ability to make his mark on the judicial branch of our federal government. Following the retirement of Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, Democrats argued that the ongoing special counsel investigation led by Robert Mueller precluded him from being able to nominate Kennedy's successor. There was no precedent or constitutional basis for this argument. President Bill Clinton nominated Stephen Breyer to the Supreme Court while he was being investigated over the Whitewater scandal. President Trump went on to nominate Brett Kavanaugh, who was confirmed following an unprecedented smear campaign by the Democrats. Do you remember all of the lies? All of the nastiness? Yeah, America remembers. I think that was the first obvious real taste of how nasty the Democrats truly are that a lot of people had. Well, now that the Democrats' partisan impeachment has reached the Senate, failed 2020 presidential candidate and U.S. Senator Kamala Harris is making a similar argument to put the brakes on Trump's making the judiciary great again. Quote, Today, the United States Senate will receive articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump and begin to determine whether the president's actions warrant his removal from office. She says this in a statement. The president is charged with high crimes and misdemeanors, and the Senate must take seriously its constitutional role in this process. During the time when articles of impeachment are before the Senate, it would be wholly inappropriate to advance the president's nominees to the federal judiciary. Despite the House impeachment inquiry, Trump continued to have success getting conservative judges on the courts. Harris thinks that somehow the situation has changed, and Trump doesn't have the presumption of innocence or the Constitution on his side. Last month, conservative pundit Mark Levin presented a theory on his radio show that impeachment is really about blocking Trump from getting another Supreme Court pick during his presidency. He said, Democrats want to claim that they've crippled this lawless president, that the Republicans wouldn't remove him from office, and there is no way that the Democrats will ever agree to him making another Supreme Court appointment, either in the next 11 months or, as I say, should he get reelected in the four years subsequent to his first term. While there's no legal or constitutional basis for this to actually work, Democrats, who know Trump won't be convicted in the Senate, seem intent on using impeachment as a black mark on Trump as a means of thwarting his agenda. Levin's theory has merit, and it's clear that Kamala Harris's suggestion that judicial nominations should come to a grinding halt is further proof that impeachment is their perverted attempt to prevent Trump from filling any more vacancy in the judiciary, not just the Supreme Court. That's Matt Margolis. He's the author of Trumping Obama, How President Trump Saved Us from Barack Obama's Legacy, and The Worst President in History, The Legacy of Barack Obama. He's on Twitter at Matt Margolis, and he also writes for PJ Media, as he did this article. And I believe he's 100% right. I believe that part of this thrust is to somehow prevent Donald Trump from restoring the judiciary. Remember what I've said before, that is, you don't transform something you love and something that's vital and something that's important. You restore it. And he is restoring the judiciary, taking it back from those who ignore the Constitution and see everything through the lens, the twisted, distorted lens of progressivism, and putting people in the judiciary who respect and honor the Constitution and abide by it. It is the law of our land. And what Obama had done was to appoint people who filtered everything through that progressive lens. And so we have bizarre judgments. We have people who, because of their own conscience, have said, I'm sorry, I can't do this thing for a certain kind of customer. And those people harshly punished by progressive judges. And what Trump has been doing is appointing conservatives to those positions that have come open and restoring the judiciary. The Ninth Circuit, which has been called the Ninth Circus for years, has been transformed. There are still progressives on the Ninth Circuit, but President Trump has been replacing progressives with conservatives. And hopefully, as a result, it won't be the most overturned circuit in America in the future. But this restoration of the judiciary is vital to the future of America. Because if you don't honor the law of the land, you shouldn't be on the bench. You shouldn't be making decisions about cases based on emotion and progressive opinion. You should be making decisions based on the law. We've already strayed a long way from the way things used to be done. There was a day when decisions were solely based upon the law, and arguments in court were solely made based upon the law. Not just case law. But at some point, a shift was made. Case law began to be the most important thing. And when I say that, I mean arguing based on prior court cases. Not the law itself, but on the outcomes of court cases. For example, if it's to your advantage to quote a court case, which was decided by a judge who sees things your way, then you argue based on that case and others like it. Even if it goes against and grinds against the letter of the law and or the Constitution. Well, now, law students are taught about how to use case law. It's a mistake, but it's happening. And we have many judges in America today who rule that way and who see the world through the progressive lens and don't honor the law itself. They reinterpret it for their purposes. We see it again and again and again across America. And President Trump is working to correct that. And that, my friend, is a very, very good thing for the country, for now, and for the future. Of course, Democrats don't want that. Because Democrats don't respect the Constitution. They don't respect law. The Democrat Party is lawless. The ends always justify whatever means necessary. And they will do whatever they have to do in order to achieve their ends. Even if that means ignoring, denying, or completely misrepresenting or misinterpreting law to suit their purposes. So more power to President Trump. Keep it up.
Yeah, you were funny. You're funny, all right. You're a scream. You ought to get a job on one of those excursion boats.
Gee, thanks, I think. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. You're there. Kimber the Wonder Dog's over there. It's a good arrangement. Let me drive. I know the streets. It's a Friday edition of the podcast. Hoping you are doing well and that you're having a great day and that your weekend ahead is going to be a good one. Well, impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. It seems like it's never going to end. And if you're sick of it like I am, I think most Americans are getting sick of it. They're tired of what they're seeing. They're seeing the Democrats for what they truly are. And unless you're purely emotional and not rational, you see this for what it is. It's just an attempt to destroy a president because he won and your candidate didn't. And it's also, if you're really paying attention and you're hearing what's going on and seeing it for what it is, you realize that it's a testimony against you. And it tells you what these people on the left really think about you. They don't like you at all. They don't like us because we won't conform. And because we won't conform, because we see things differently, our perspective is different, we disagree with them, they somehow would like to see us punished. They must control us. That's one of the things that came out of the Project Veritas video with that field operative for the Bernie Sanders campaign. All the talk about gulags, about retraining people, re-educating people. Yeah. There are people, a lot of people on the left who see life that way. And they believe that you are dangerous because you refuse to conform to their way of thinking. It's a sad thing. A very sad thing. But then, back to impeachment. There's an article in the Washington Free Beacon today. It's called The Never-Ending Impeachment. Matthew Continetti writes, maybe Nancy Pelosi held on to the impeachment articles because she was waiting for her pens to arrive. The fancy commemorative ballpoints featuring the speaker's name engraved in gold that Nancy Pelosi gave to colleagues at Wednesday's engrossment ceremony quickly became the subject of mockery. Republicans saw them as emblematic of Democratic partisanship and triviality. Mitch McConnell actually said from the floor of the Senate, nothing says seriousness and sobriety like handing out souvenirs, as though this were a happy bill signing instead of the gravest process in our Constitution. In Pelosi's eyes, impeachment is something to celebrate. It's more than an accomplishment. It's the most significant product of the 116th Congress. What McConnell calls the gravest process has been the preferred means of Democrats to inflict maximum damage on President Trump and possibly remove him from office before the end of his term. The trial that begins on Tuesday has been years in the making, and the drive to impeach Trump won't end when the verdict is rendered. He may well end up the first president to be impeached multiple times. Maxine Waters has been chanting Impeach 45 since the spring of 2017. Representative Al Green introduced the first impeachment resolution that summer. Tom Steyer founded Need to Impeach that October. In November 2017, a group of House Democrats introduced additional articles of impeachment. The same thing happened in December 2017, January 2018, March 2019, May 2019, and July 2019. House Democrats accused Trump of violating the Emoluments Clause, obstructing justice, associating with white nationalism, separating families of illegal immigrants, and more. Pelosi resisted. Why? Not because she thought impeachment was wrong, because none of the articles advanced by the left would win a majority of her caucus. Then the whistleblower arrived. The story he told about shenanigans in Ukraine was enough to bring aboard moderates from swing districts. The rushed inquiry and polarized vote on two vague and weak articles betrayed the political motivations behind the enterprise. Impeachment shields Pelosi from left-wing recriminations in the event that Trump is reelected and Democrats retain the House. And the investigations, hearings, and trial guarantee a steady stream of bad press for Trump and hostile questions that make some Republicans squirm. Pelosi is more than happy for additional evidence to be disclosed and for the Senate to call witnesses, even after the House has impeached and when the resolution of the trial is foreordained. It's not justice she's after. It's victory in November. Expect leaks of damaging information before key procedural votes, just as happened during the Kavanaugh confirmation fight. When Trump is acquitted or the charges against him dismissed, Democrats will pronounce the verdict illegitimate and accuse Republican senators of involvement in a cover-up. No charge is too outlandish. Pelosi and impeachment manager Hakeem Jeffries have advanced the ridiculous conspiracy that McConnell has Russian connections of his own. Chuck Schumer told the New York Times, it's a win-win. There's a cautionary lesson for Democrats in the Kavanaugh episode. As the allegations against Kavanaugh grew more absurd and the D.C. climate more inhospitable, Republicans found themselves more unified. The senators that Democrats hope will side with them on procedural motions might demur. Susan Collins, for example, isn't anybody's pawn. She said in a blistering comment to the Times, I don't think Chuck Schumer is very interested in my opinion. I don't think he's really very interested in doing anything but trying to defeat me by telling lies to the people of Maine. And you can quote me on that. After the House Intelligence Committee dropped a trove of documents from Lev Parnas, the former Giuliani associate under indictment for campaign finance violations, the day before senators were sworn in as jurors, Collins said, I wonder why the House did not put that into the record, and it's only now being revealed. Good question. House Republicans voted in unison against impeachment, not because they fear President Trump, But because the Democrat case was weak, a similar dynamic might take shape once senators who haven't been paying attention to the scandal listen, in silence, to the House managers and the president's attorneys. How the House managers, such as Adam Schiff, behave on the Senate floor might also sway jurors. The test of Republican unity will be a motion to call witnesses. Republican senators will have to ask why they would want to make Schumer's job, winning the Senate for Democrats in 2020, any easier by crossing party lines. Prolonging the trial would legitimize a flawed and politicized investigation. Republicans understand by now that Pelosi and Schumer aren't engaged in an honest fact-finding mission. They are the leaders of an impeachment that will never end. That's Matthew Continetti from the Free Beacon, and he's right on target. This will never end. The Democrats will not stop. This is the progressive pattern. They never back down. They never surrender. They never admit wrongdoing. And they never admit defeat. Example? Hillary Clinton. She still says she won. She didn't win because the United States doesn't elect presidents on the popular vote. It never has. Our founders were wiser than that. They understood what could happen if there was a popular vote. They understood that there would be areas of the nation which would not be represented and which would suffer at the decisions of the majority. And so they instituted a plan called the Electoral College that gave less populated states fair representation and kept the left-leaning or kept areas of the nation more densely populated from having a heavy-handed advantage over those that are not. If we didn't have the Electoral College, all of the elections would be decided by Los Angeles and New York. And regardless of where you live, you know that isn't right. You don't have representation in a situation like that. And you know you want that representation. So Hillary didn't win. But she still says she did. Even though, by the rules of the game, there's no way you can come to that conclusion. But this is the ideology we're dealing with. That example is the ideology we're dealing with. The progressives on the left, the Democrats, will never stop pounding the impeachment drum. They've already said, they've already left the door open for charges to follow the trial in the Senate. They've already said, well, we'll just have to see how that goes. In other words, if they don't get the outcome they want from the Senate trial, they will file more articles of impeachment. They will drag the nation through more months of this torture because they didn't get their way. It's a lot like a petulant teenager who isn't getting to go with their friends to do stuff they want to do, making your life miserable around the house because they have to be there instead of where they want to be. It's the same kind of attitude. It's the same kind of thing, only it's supposedly adults who are doing it. But if you look at it that way, if you think of it that way, it makes a lot of sense. These are people who are rebelling against the rest of the world because they can't have what they want. So they will continue to make life in America unpleasant in hopes that somebody will back down and say, oh, for Pete's sake, just let them have this so they'll shut up. And that can't happen. It can't be allowed to happen. If you're a parent, you understand why. Because when you give in, what the child learns is that they can control you. And they can run the house. And that's something we should never, ever, ever allow progressives to win on.
There is that fine line between genius and madness.
Absolutely true. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. I was looking over my list of things I really wanted to talk about. Just not going to get to some of them. I really wanted to talk about Mark Hamill. You know, he quit Facebook. I'll touch on that very quickly. Mark Hamill has decided he's had enough of Facebook. He's too woke for Facebook. So he's decided he hates other people having differing opinions than himself. He wants everybody to agree with him, and everybody is an idiot for not agreeing with him, so he's quit Facebook. Apparently, the force is not as strong with this guy as he thinks. God bless his heart! He wants to ban speech he doesn't like. So people like him, that live in this little bubble, that don't seem to understand that free speech means all speech, as uncomfortable as that may be, those are the people who would like to run the world. Those are the people who would love to pass laws which say, if you don't call someone who has mental issues by their preferred pronoun, you're going to jail. That's what's happening in some countries. And somebody like Mark Hamill agrees with that. And that's why America hates Hollywood. There's a poll out. I'll include these two stories in the show notes today so you can actually see. But there is a poll that finds that that America trusts Hollywood less than they do the government. And they don't trust the government. I'll put that in the show notes as well today. And you can read that for yourself, all right? So make sure you get the show notes, and you do that by going to the Daily Perspective Podcast Facebook page or dailyperspectivepodcast.com. The show notes are there, both places, and you can catch the show notes every day. And it's the show notes are the links to the stories that I share with you without the commentary, but you get the links of the stories. And why that's great is because all of these stories also have links embedded in them, which take you to sources. It lets you get really deep digging into more information. It's a good resource. Okay. Now, there's a new story that is being misrepresented in a lot of ways, especially in the leftist press. And so I did some digging, and I found a take on it from The Blaze that I think is probably pretty accurate. It's a story by Nate Madden on the Trump administration, making new moves to protect religious freedom, including the right to pray in school. And here we go. The Trump administration observed National Religious Freedom Day yesterday with a series of executive efforts to protect the conscience rights of students, teachers, and religious organizations, including the right to pray in school. During a phone call briefing with reporters on Thursday, Domestic Policy Council Director Joe Grogan said that the administration was taking three big actions to ensure that people of faith are always able to exercise their rights to religious expression. The first of those actions would be new federal regulations issued by 9 different federal agencies that would ensure that religious and non-religious organizations are treated equally by the federal government and that organizations are not discriminated against simply because they are religious in nature. He explained this on the phone call. One of those departments, the Department of Education, announced a lengthy proposed rule on Thursday dealing with 5 general areas of importance to religious organizations, faith-based institutions, and their students in regards to the First Amendment. Among its other provisions, the rule includes language meant to protect the rights of religious student organizations at colleges and universities that receive federal money. As an aside, this is so important because we're seeing now, you've seen stories like I have. I know you have. They don't always make it high enough in the stack for me here, but the stories happen on a regular basis where some college has disavowed a group space to gather because they're a faith-based group. They discriminate against faith-based groups, and it's all based on the complete misrepresentation of church and state, the whole issue. And this seeks to solve that problem. Moving forward, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos said in a statement, "Our actions today will protect the constitutional rights of students, teachers, and faith-based institutions. The department's efforts will level the playing field between religious and non-religious organizations competing for federal grants, as well as protect First Amendment freedoms on campus and the religious liberty of faith-based institutions." Similarly, the Justice Department also announced a proposed rule that would remove regulatory burdens on religious organizations and ensure that religious and non-religious organizations are treated equally in DOJ-supported programs. Attorney General William Barr said of the proposal, "Since our nation's founding, there has always been a strong consensus about the centrality of religious liberty in the United States and freedom of religious expression. The framers of the Constitution believed that both were indispensable to sustaining our free system of government." Grogan also said that the president would announce updated federal guidance on prayer in public schools, which he said hadn't been updated since 2003. The guidance explains, "Although the Constitution forbids public school officials from directing or favoring prayer in their official capacities, students and teachers do not shed their constitutional rights to freedom of speech or expression at the schoolhouse gate. The guidance requires that school districts have to annually certify in writing that they have no policy that prevents or otherwise denies participation in constitutionally protected prayer in schools in order to receive federal funds, citing federal education laws. It also requires state education departments to annually notify the Department of Education that have not filed the required certification or that have been the subject of a complaint about policies impeding the right to pray." The third action Grogan described was an Office of Management and Budget memo requiring federal agencies to ensure that their grant practices and the grant practices of state entities that take federal fundings comply with the religious freedom precedent set down by the Supreme Court in its 2017 Trinity Lutheran case. In that case, the court ruled it unconstitutional for the government to disqualify religious organizations' access to public benefits because of their religious nature. At a White House event announcing the prayer guidance on Thursday afternoon, President Donald Trump called the right to pray a very important and powerful right, adding, "There's nothing more than that, I would say. In a sacred principle of our republic, the government must never stand between the people and God," he continued. "Yet in public schools around the country, authorities are stopping students and teachers from praying, sharing their faith, or following their religious beliefs. It is totally unacceptable." This is very good news for people of faith, regardless of what your faith is. You notice this doesn't say it's strictly Christian. It is regardless of your faith. You are further protected. The exercise of your faith is further protected. Now, you can expect, probably today, blowback, a lot of blowback. Within the next few days, you can probably expect to see progressive judges, justices across the country, scrambling for their moment in the spotlight, as people like the these people who show up and tattle on you if you pray at football games, the Freedom from Religion Foundation, those people, you can expect them to make a lot about this. They will misrepresent the laws of this nation as they always do. They will misinterpret and misrepresent the laws of this country And they will say that this actually is the reverse of the situation. That they're just trying to protect these poor kids who are a captive audience from being proselytized. And that is a load of horse hockey, if I may say so. And if I may say so, have a great weekend. God bless you. Looking forward to seeing you back right here again next Monday for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
We'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?